You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
And you are locked in for the review of the second Mamma Mia film. Congratulations. You can probably have some guesses about how this is going to go. You might be wrong. You're probably not wrong, but you might be wrong. Anyway, that's up next. But first, let me just tell you guys, drink Oscar Blues beer. It's so good. They're sponsoring the website, so you should do us and them a favor and go pick up an Oscar Blues beer. The first people to put craft beer in a can with their Dale's Pale Ale. They're absolutely delicious, and they have brew pubs in Austin, two in Colorado, and one in North Carolina. Check them out. Also, thank you to subscribers, and we need more of you. We desperately need more of you. I'm not even kidding. This is like, I mean, we really, really, really are at that point where if we don't have consistently increasing subscribers, I can't do this. This is a full, more than a full-time job. This is like a shit ton of work every week, making sure all this stuff comes together, and I cannot do it without making sure that I'm basically not going to like starve to death or be able to pay my rent and bills. And not to mention the site constantly needs fixes and that costs money too. So guys, think about becoming a subscriber. That's how this keeps going. Anyway, I've done enough bitching on my part. I will go on and let you guys listen to Mamma Mia.
No, here we go again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's not Mamma Mia 2.
I thought it was with a vengeance.
Yeah, there you go.
That's Attack of the Clones.
Don't forget exclamation point. It is part of the title.
Yeah, I thought in general with sequels, though, like the second one has to be 2, and then the third one you can start calling it like the other things. Yeah.
Well, let's just break in 2.
It's Mamma Mia Ghost Protocol.
Exactly. It's two Mamma, two Furious.
That's true. That one didn't do that.
It's okay. Two Mamma, three Daddy.
Well,
that's actually pretty good.
Full disclosure, I didn't see this one, and it wasn't because of some accident.
Quitter.
Or another screening at the same time. I really did not want to
see it. So, okay, I was trying to point. You sat through all three Fifty Shades movies, but this was beyond.
Chris, this movie was my Waterloo. I couldn't escape it if I wanted to.
Live in Waterloo, technically.
I never saw the original, for one thing. And with those, it was like, yeah, it was the, you know, we saw the first one. I was like, well, I guess I'm in here for this ride. I might as well buckle up.
Well, they would have filled you in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely would have filled you in.
But the poor souls that I exposed to this film, that, by the way, has 90, as of this recording, is 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
We can knock that down.
They're being paid Marvel money.
I haven't written my review yet.
No, fair enough. But we've got
Mike.
Frank.
Ben.
Okay, guys. Like, real briefly, what's the first one about? So people know.
Well, Ben is the Mamma Mia expert.
Yeah, apparently. I've watched it far too many times because my mother loves it. The plot of the movie is literally the main character is what's her name again?
Donna.
Well,
Donna
the
is
first
the
first one. That's Meryl Streep.
We're talking about the first one because he's asking what the first one.
No,
was
but
about.
Meryl Streep isn't the main character of the first one.
Well, she's also. It doesn't matter. Okay, her daughter wants to know who her dad is because she wants to
she's
get
getting married. Sophie, thank you. Sophie's getting married. She wants to know her father. Well, her mom never told her, and she finds her mom's diary, which says basically her mom banged three guys in the course of a week.
Probably
and has
at
no
the same
idea
time.
Who the father is. So she invites three guys who happen to be Colin Firth, Pierce Brosnan, and Stellan Skarsgård.
And the girl's Amanda Seyfried.
Amanda Seyfried, you're right. Yeah. And basically invites them all to her wedding without telling her mom or her mom's friends that are her aunts. And Meryl Streep basically has to go, oh shit, these are all the guys I fucked, what do I do now? And that was basically the first movie.
And then really people sing.
It's a bad sitcom with Adam music reinterpreted.
Yeah, and I mean, the end of that movie, the only thing you need to know is they all say, we'll be your dad and we don't care who's your real dad, and Meryl Streep marries Pierce Brosnan.
There you go.
But did she get to still have sex with the other two guys too?
Well one of them turns out to be gay, yeah.
So maybe?
Fair enough.
For this movie, though.
So all these years later.
So years later. Meryl
5 years later.
Yeah, 5 years later. Meryl Streep has been dead for a year, probably from an ABBA death cult. So
that was a thing. It scares me.
It's never mentioned. But
I would have seen that movie if that was a real
but
one.
But Sophie is trying
I
to.
I had this reoccurring nightmare of people like in robes stabbing me to death while singing Dancing Queen. So maybe there's something to that.
Yeah, they're super troopers, actually.
Exactly. So the story of this is that Sophie is trying to open open up the hotel thing that they were living in the first one.
The hotel
thing. I don't know. It's like,
what her mother failed to do.
Yeah, her mother failed to do.
The plot of the first movie.
Yeah, and so she's going to open this thing up with the help of Andy Garcia and her fiancé, Sky, played by Dominic Cooper, is in New York, and he's been given a job offer. And so he's considering staying, but she's all upset about that.
I don't know why they're still engaged, because they almost broke up twice in the first movie.
No, they decided to live in sin, remember?
That's what I'm saying, is they almost broke up twice, and then they said at the end, you know what, let's not get married right now, let's travel the world. And now it's like, now you're still living on other sides of the planet, and he's like, I might take this job in New York, you should abandon yours and your mother's dream and come live with me.
And so she sends out invitations to everyone to come to this opening, and only one person, one of the three dads is going to make it. Currently, because he lives there, which is Pierce Brosnan.
And he still doesn't show up for half the movie.
Yeah, he's only in the chunk of the movie, but I digress. And then,
I've heard about his singing skills. It's probably...
Oh my God. He doesn't sing, and we're all so much luckier for it.
And anybody on the radio is auto-tuned, but we're not going to do Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, and so while all of this stuff is happening, it flashes back to basically everything that you were told in the first one, but now acted out fully by a bunch of different people. One of them playing the young Donna is the love interest from
Baby Driver.
Baby Driver, yeah.
Lily James.
Lily James. And she's actually not bad.
She can sing still.
We don't deserve her. I mean, I think she's really great. I love her, like, curves, her charm, and just, like, she's her ease.
But shenanigans happen.
She sings amazingly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how much of this film is the flashbacks with young Meryl Streep?
The first, like, 70%.
Christine Baranski, her young version is what? Jessica Keenan-Wen. Julie Waters' young version is Alexa Davies. Pierce Brosnan's is Jeremy Irvine.
Who played Colin a young Firth, he played a young Colin Skinner. Firth before, actually, in another movie.
Yeah, and Colin Skarsgård is Josh Dillon.
The guy who played
Cher is in this. Cher
plays Sophie's grandma.
Cher who's turned into Janice the Muppet, pretty much.
She really is.
She doesn't move a lot.
She plays Meryl Streep's mother in this movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who shows up
they're 4 years apart in age, by the way.
Which was the weirdest. But, you know, Sean Connery wasn't that much older than Harrison Ford.
That's true.
So,
Cher don't crack those.
I will say, the guy who played young Colin Firth played, like, the most, like, caricature of Colin Firth in almost the best way, to the point where he's almost like Hugh Grant babbling over himself.
Yes.
And it was kind of funny. And then he does get the first song that's at all worth listening to in this, which is Waterloo, the first A-side song they play from an ABBA album. And it's a kind of fun scene. They're in what seems to be the first French theme restaurant themed after Napoleon.
I thought it was Captain Crunch themed, but that's just me.
It's fun because all the good same songs are really, like, used up now, aren't they?
They replayed, like, a lot of the songs.
They had to because all the other ones, it's like they got the B-sides left. Even though my favorite one, Name of the Game, was... Shout out. I like that one.
I feel like if the theme is disco, why not do the Bee Gees for this one? It
would have made more sense to at least bring in some of the songs from that era, but they're just like, we got to keep doing what we have on us that we can afford currently. Because apparently they just couldn't afford Meryl Streep for more than a day.
And we basically found out that Cher is doing her next album, supposed to be an ABBA album.
Cover.
And it's like, oh, so did they get Cher by saying, you can use our whole library if you show up for 5 minutes in this movie.
Like,
please do this.
Yeah, no, it's like Cher and Streep are only here to sing songs. They sing a song, and then that's basically
Cher's not in it very much at all either?
Not really.
You know, tries to emote through the boat talk. It doesn't really work.
Exactly. Well, I guess we can just talk about the actual story of the film, I guess.
Past
the point of what I said,
that's
I guess.
I went to the bathroom.
because besides the flashback stuff, which is all just stuff that we've all seen, been told in the first one. The actual stuff for the other characters is Annie Garcia is just like is a random side character that says, my love is gone, she'll come back eventually or some shit. The other two dads, played by Colin Firth and Stellan Skarsgård. Colin Firth is hanging out in Japan
for a business deal
with anime posters, I guess.
There was a big anime poster lit up next to me going, hey, look,
it was
JoJo!
The most excited I got in the entire film.
I recognize that reference.
Yes, exactly.
But it also dated the film for me, because that specific season ended, like, years ago.
Serious progress in that scene, though.
Stellan Skarsgård is accepting an award somewhere, so he's
for, like,
originally
greatest
supposed to make
Swede of all time.
Yeah, which is fucking weird.
That kind of movie,
what
Chris.
What kind of shit is that?
Of all time.
Which is funny, because someone else is indeed playing Stellan Skarsgård, so it's kind of a Swede in and of itself.
I gotta say, the movie, you kind of don't care for many of the new characters, even the guys playing the younger versions of them. It's literally the second you get, like, Christine Baranski in there again, and you get Julie Walters back in there. It's like, you guys were, like, half the reason the last movie had any charm, because you were still super charismatic in light of the screen. And literally, yeah, you get Colin Firth on the screen, you just go, Colin Firth, you're a treasure.
He's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Please just light up every bad movie.
He's my favorite part of this film.
Every time he shows up, you're like, the whole crowd laughs. Like, we had Martin next to us and Corey, and even those guys were just dying every time Colin Firth is on screen. He's like, you're just the nice guy who's like gets in the worst scenes and the worst situations for you, and it's the best.
But yeah, every single scene with all of the original three dads, I have to say it that way, I guess. There's no scene except for like once with Pierce Brosnan is for like maybe 30 seconds. And it's obvious that the director is like, just don't try too hard and no one will care. And we didn't because we're like, well, that happened, I guess.
To try. Oh, okay.
And there's so many sequences where people just sing for like
musical reasons.
And musical reasons.
About that.
The very first shot is Amanda Seyfried, and she's like, I'm just going to sing without any music in the background, so it's just going
to
be awkward.
To be fair, that's how the first movie starts, too. She's rowing a boat singing I Have a Dream.
At least she's singing at something. Instead, she's just, like, signing.
She was singing at the ocean in that one.
Yeah, which is way more interesting than singing at fucking postcards.
So I do have to say, she puts together these postcards to invite people to the opening of the hotel. What threw me later in the movie was she sends out three to all three of her dads, but Pierce Brosnan's living on the fucking island, and she puts it in the mailbox to be taken to the mainland to be mailed out. I'm like,
you're saying there's no mailman there?
Maybe it's just habit.
There's mailmen there. They have needs.
This movie broke Ben with the continuity.
I was not paying attention to the plot, so that part was like, this bugs me now.
Oh, yeah. And so a storm happens. The opening's fucked. On accident, I guess.
The Greek gods.
The opening of the inn.
Yeah, the opening of the inn happened.
No, it's Grand Hotel now, called the Belladonna. Yeah.
Turns out that young Donna kept breaking into this hotel and damaging it horrifically, and then stole a horse.
and then eventually the owner goes, oh no, I own that place. I know you're squatting there. Yeah, just take it.
This movie's fucking weird. Okay, so because the entirety
your bad debt.
The entirety of the flashback sequence is just Donna just getting away with random shit that any other person would have been arrested for pretty much immediately.
Bad kid.
And just sleeping with, like, everyone, apparently.
Just white people things. It's okay.
All right, fair enough.
And there's a sequence in the very beginning of the flashback sequence that just happens all of a sudden of her graduating. Because she's late to her own graduation or something. And then they're like, you're the valedictorian, I guess, because we can choose that or something.
Yeah, they said it was by vote for the valedictorian.
Which is not how the valedictorian works. And she gets up and just starts singing and stripping all of a sudden. And then,
not the way you want.
And then her friends show up, and then they start singing. And then I guess they drive a teacher crazy, and she starts singing.
They strip to bell bottoms, and then basically sing a song about
kissing the teacher.
Yeah, it's basically Hoffer Teacher, the disco version.
They then basically pull an
ABBA song.
No, it was an ABBA song.
It was an ABBA
but
song.
But the song is literally
I kissed the teacher.
Yeah. And literally, then there's a point where it's
apparently
like,
they pied Piper the rest of the class away.
Like, did you give this professor acid? Because they leave the scene, and all of a sudden, like this, 60-year-old Irish professor is dancing with a boa and doing full like disco hip thrusts.
Just
like,
loses her shit.
What the fuck is happening right now?
And they Pied Piper the rest of the class away somewhere, and then they dance on some dude's boat.
No, they all go on bike. They all cycle away.
I don't fucking understand. I'm trying to figure out how to explain this movie.
The thing is, Chris, you should have been there.
It's confusing because it's musical logic, but they don't stay consistent with it. Like every other song is not musical logic. It's somebody actually singing in the real world, and then it's something super grandiose like that. It's like,
pick your lane. They do flip back and
forth. Eventually, the other two dads show up with the help of somebody from the flashback.
Contractual.
And then everybody's probably drunk on that cruise because everybody's dancing on their way there.
Fuck, wouldn't you be?
Dominic Cooper shows up because he's like, I love you or whatever.
He says, I love you or whatever. What a romantic.
Like, every time Dominic Cooper first starts singing, I looked at Ben and I'm like, that motherfucker looks so fucking bored. Yeah. He's just
looks bored. But you know, that was really the only musical number I liked, apart from naming.
Really?
The game. I really liked that. I thought that they switched that up really well, and like the way they switched between Greece and New York. I thought it was pretty cool.
But a lot of these songs just sort of happen.
Yeah.
I think one of the ones that just broke Ben was when Fernando started playing.
Mike, you're the one who literally shouted, God damn it!
I said that because I knew it was going to happen eventually. And when it happened, I couldn't... I couldn't contain the fact that this was dumb shit.
There's a little by that point, even like the, you know, the women that came here was like, oh, I love ABBA and I love musicals. Where even like with Mike's like, no, really, that just, you forced that.
But they sing Mamma Mia at one point, so that happens. At
that point, when that happens, you're like, oh, fuck it, who gives a shit now? We're nearing the end here, do whatever you want.
I really don't know what to say about this film, because the thing is, the first 70% of this film is just a lot of flashbacks and... And
they switch back and forth.
That's what we're waiting for.
Man, this director, Ollie Parker, whatever his name is, cannot handle transitions to save his life.
Yeah, because the problem is every time it flips between the present and the past, is there's no actual connection to any of them. It's kind of like listening to The Ghost of Christmas Past from the Future from Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Because he's just randomly saying, thousands of years ago, like in the middle of a conversation. Because it doesn't make any sense. It's like, why are you flashing back to the sequence? Because it doesn't match what's happening in the present. Because everything that's happening in the present, like the one time it does match, it's like because it's raining, I guess.
Yeah.
And the thing is that every time it flashes back, it's like you're just telling us something we already know.
Well, Seyfried and James found out they're knocked up at the same time.
Yeah. And
I can say the movie did have one great singer. It's that Italian guy singing Lips of Fire.
I like that guy.
that guy was the best.
But the main thing about
thinks they're good.
Yeah, because everything that's what's the word I'm looking for? Conflict. Every bit of conflict in the present is fixed within like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Like within this in the second half of it, or not even the second half. It's like the last third of this film. And the thing is, the last third, for some reason, I didn't hate the last third. The last third was a little fun.
So you loved it, is what you're saying.
Well, no, because the last third was actually enjoyable, because that's when they went back to the A side you already knew.
Yeah, exactly.
It's when the characters start having fun again instead of this new stuff starts happening. Conflict that they keep coming up with. Like, the storm in both scenes, in the past and the present, when it happens, literally just one character goes, there's going to be a storm, and they're like, oh, okay, crazy person. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of sunlight, while they're all outside, clouds show up out of nowhere, and then a monsoon happens.
It's like Thor was really pissed off that day.
It's like, yeah, what exactly. The fuck is happening? Storms don't just drop on you. You at least see a cloud.
It's really strange.
God. Sorry, the cats are going crazy because a moth got in.
But the strangest thing... Yeah, because the third act, is where new stuff starts happening. And so all the people who are actually charming get to be charming for once.
Right.
And so there's a lot of fun to be had with it. And me and Ben were kind of making jokes at the movie's expense.
Oh, I was too.
Every now and then.
So much.
But
Christine Baranski shows up in this really like elaborate, gaudy purple dress and thinking, man, she got that into a suitcase. It's just like, I mean, it's...
I put out the mic. If you look at the flashback, they have the same suitcases in the present.
They do.
You took really good care of that suitcase for a jet-setting rich person, didn't you?
I know. Yeah,
it's pretty insane.
Your luggage.
But overall, like... Well, what do you guys haven't really spoken much about this?
Well, we've just complained, really.
I mean, honestly, I've been trying to think about it. Do I hate this more than the first one? And I don't think I do, actually. I think a lot more of it comes together better at the end and faster than the first one. The first one, throughout it, I'm just like, you're really belaboring this point. They went back and forth on things that they shouldn't go back and forth on in the first one. There's literally a scene where, you know, as I said, she fights with her fiancé, and then that fight means nothing two scenes later. It was just for forcing another song in a conflict. They don't quite force that kind of conflict into the story of the present, at least. Some of the flashbacks, when we kind of knew those, you know, conflicts were going to happen. I think they balance that a little bit better, where, you know, some of the logic, it's still kind of bad romantic comedy type of logic, but it works better. And I think overall, the cast that came back was having more fun with it this time. They're just like, we're back in Greece for free. Let's just do this.
I really hated this worse than the first one.
Oh, wow.
You know? Yeah, I really did. At least the first one's a horrible movie. I'm the only homo I know that hated this movie.
I love how you had to say that, I guess, apparently.
Yeah, but I feel like it's worth clarifying. No. It's like okay, it's true. We didn't have a female in this recording for a movie that's definitely aimed at least half towards ladies.
So you get the next best
thing. We do have a gay guy who's also aimed at...
Colin Firth is here? Where?
I feel validated because I love musicals and felt like this was...
I love musicals.
Yeah, see, I love musicals.
Well, I love good musicals. This happened to be not
I like the Blues Brothers.
I've watched Deadpool 2, the musical, like 5 times this week.
Damn it. I mean, I like 9, but that's just me.
Well, let's start with I guess we can start with final thoughts. Because there isn't a lot that we have said other than this thing of
We're not selling this movie. So, anyway,
Ben, if you want to start.
Sure. I mean, as I said, I think to an extent this might be better than the first one. That's not saying a lot, because I do hate the first one, but I think it relied on less plot contrivances. It just didn't really have plot or necessary plot or really characters that seem to have any momentum besides, like, we have a plan. Oh, minor setback from this hurricane, blah, blah, blah. Something always came up.
Never heard of the word postpone, apparently.
Yeah. I think... Yeah, no, they didn't. They were like, this
is like, it's ruined.
Yeah. This party's ruined.
I can't do it because every other day.
We can't wait a week for everybody to show up. Yeah. We have to do it this day. But they don't even set a date where it's like, oh, this would have been Mom's birthday. We have to open it on her birthday. Like, nothing like that.
Yeah, there's nothing important about the day, apparently.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean... But overall, yeah, I think it's a bit better for losing those contrivances, doing too many ABBA B-sides that... Let's be fair. I like ABBA. They're fun pop disco-y music. They don't try to pretend like they're some high art. It's like, no, they're fun music. That's about it. But I don't know ABBA B-sides. I know Dancing Queen. I know Fernando.
There's a reason Super Trooper. B-sides.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Like, so,
the whole sequel's a B-side.
I could even feel like some of the crowd was like, what song is this?
Yeah.
Like, they're dancing and it's singing. I'm trying to have a fun time, but I don't know any words to this. I'm not going to have a fun time. So I think overall... I mean, I'm going to be generous because I also think we're generally not the biggest audience for this one. It's going to be primarily women over the age of 50 who
heard the songs
in their college, high school years, all that stuff. It's for the crowd that no longer has 50 Shades to draw them to a theater. I would say for me personally, it's maybe like a 6 for that crowd. It's probably an 8, and I'll give it 8. Random thunderstorms out of 10.
You get 8 out of
10? For that crowd.
I
give it a 6.
You give it a 6?
You gave it a 6.
I give it a 6, but for them, I say it's an 8. If you're in that audience, go see this movie.
Is it still Thundercloud's song?
It didn't have enough Pierce Brosnan, is what my mother would give it.
Oh, okay.
That's a fair point.
More than enough Pierce Brosnan.
He didn't sing, right?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I hated the first one so much. The director of the first one, Phyllida Lloyd, should not be allowed near a movie camera at all. And you know, she's a horrendous director, has got no chops whatsoever. Anyways, not to me to hate on her that much. You know, this movie doesn't have a reason to exist. I mean, most sequels don't have reasons to exist. This one really doesn't have a reason to exist. I think had it just been following Lily James and been a prequel, I think you would have had something there.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
You know, I mean, because she's charismatic enough. She's, you know, the camera loves her. You know, she's got that effervescent quality, and she's so energetic. And you know, women and men can really like be drawn to her. If they'd gone with that, you know, you wouldn't have minded that. You know, it would have been just the B-sides. It would have been an origin story. It would have been fine. Instead, you got all these name actors just essentially saying, "Hey, yeah, I'm still alive. I'm still here. Let's do this. I'll sing to this song." You know, Streep and Cher are only there to sing songs. Although, let's say on Twitter, somebody said, picture Cher singing every song from the Greatest Showman soundtrack, and you know she'll just knock it out of the park. I mean, it's true. She does knock Fernando out of the park, even though I don't know that song that well. But
the only
you
song
know,
I know, to be
she's
honest.
Cher. You got
she's Cher. She's Cher. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, this is going to please who it's meant to please, but it just didn't please me. I thought the transitions were rough as hell, but, you know, whatever. It's ABBA. That music lives on. For whatever reason, it struck a chord, and it continues to do so, and for that reason, just for the music alone, I got to give it maybe, like, I guess a 6.5 out of... 10. Cher's playing Meryl Streep's mother. What the fuck?
You guys are very generous with this film. I'm amazed by that. Because you guys, I thought you guys hated it more than I did.
We like the music, though.
The music, you know.
And they got better singers, debatably, for the new actors.
The first, like, 70% of this film, there's a lot of jokes that I just didn't laugh at. Like, the audience seemed to really like some of the jokes, and I was just like, I don't really find any of this funny. But, like I said, that third chunk of it, though, for some reason, just made me happy. I don't really know exactly why. I guess part of it is the music. Part of it's the music because it's a lot of the more ABBA songs that we know. You guys,
the moth just like looked like it fell out of your hand and flew away.
Oh, okay. The moth is still flying around. But there's a lot of jokes. Yeah, the audience really likes some of the jokes. But yeah, the third act, especially with Colin, when Colin Firth really got to have fun with it again, and the same with Pierce Brosnan and Stellan Skarsgård, I ended up having a little bit of fun with it.
The music, like you guys said, there's a lot of B-side stuff that you're just like, I don't know the song. I don't give a fuck about this. Why are you even dancing right now? Who the fuck is that guy in the background kind of thing? Like, random shit like that. And then I couldn't help but be confused by the flashbacks every time. But Frank is right, though. If it was just the flashback stuff and that was just the entire film, I probably would have thought the film would have been a little better, I guess. Because at that point, you can focus on a little more of the relationships between these characters. But it's just, it feels like somebody's short film that they decided to make and then just add into the middle of this film. Exactly.
I watch Mamma Mia slash fic.
The flashbacks basically end with Mamma Mia, and I don't know. Overall, I personally would have to give it 4 out of 10 times. I went, "Holy shit, is that a motherfucking JoJo reference?"
Oh god,
there were 4 times there were JoJo references.
Sure.
So if there's a third one, is it going to be Tokyo Drift? Is it going to be the Revenge?
It's going to be Revenge of the Mamma Mia.
A new nightmare.
It's going to be the actual Greeks that they kicked off the island for their
how
hotel coming back for revenge.
It's going to be a return.
Big is their fucking song.
It's
going to
be a return of the Streep.
Dawn of the Mamma Mia.